Chris Johnson, we find him in Vegas today. Chris, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
We are well. It's we said it yesterday with Elliot, and we're really not that predictable, so we'll roll with it again. Misery loves company. Flames Twitter and Leafs Twitter. Who's crying harder here?
Oh, man. I think it's probably Leafs Twitter when I think about it. But it's got to be close. So I was in Vegas on Sunday and went down to the game, saw the Flames play the Golden Knights, and I you could just feel the frustration. Obviously, I don't spend the time around the team that you guys do, and I understand why both fan bases are feeling that misery. I mean, look, these are teams that had high expectations, and I think everyone's starting to realize this isn't not early anymore. You know, there's certainly time to turn things around, but you can't just dismiss the stretches they've been on and say, oh, everything's fine here. And so, you know, I don't know what I'm going to say. I mean, I guess if the Leafs lose tonight, maybe they'll be more disappointed, with they're in Vegas and they've dropped 5-0 already. It's the longest losing streak they've had since, guys like Matthews and Marner joined the team. And, there's a lot of heat, I guess, in both places.
Yeah, and if the Flames find a way to lose tonight, that'll be reopening the wounds of last spring when they were dispatched in five by the Avalanche. So good competition. That's good to see. Let's go a little further with the Leafs. How much of the struggles have to do with a new roster and the moves that were made in the offseason? We talk about, a lot of players that weren't here are in, a lot of guys that were there are gone. Or is this more on the coach? Because it feels like there's a lot of pressure on Babcock, and yet how has life been without Kadri? How has Tyson Barrie done? Some of the GM stuff hasn't gone great through a quarter of the season.
It's exactly how I look at it. I mean, look, I think every team can have excuses, right? Every team's got, poor runs of schedule. Every team deals with injuries and types of things Toronto's had. I think really what's done them in is they've had a lot of players underperform. And a lot of those players play big minutes for them on their blue line. I look at, even someone like Morgan Rielly, who, I think has played injured all year. He's missed five or six practices for maintenance. He's played every game, but there's a sense he's not at his best or at his health is at his fullest. But, it's been a tougher season for him than he had last year. Tyson Barrie, it just hasn't worked so far. I don't know if that means it'll never work or that he won't turn it around, but, a guy who had 59 points last year for the Avalanche and has been a pretty consistent producer offensively. He has two assists in the last 19 games. He says he's never felt anything like this in his career, that the pressure's getting to him, the idea that he's in a contract season, he's a UFA at the end of the year, and just dealing with the new situation. I mean, that's hurt them. They don't have a backup goaltender. They don't have a win from anyone other than Frederik Andersen and net. And so, I think in Toronto, often the players escape the criticism because Mike Babcock is such a big personality and soaks up so much attention. But I think this is really on the guys and they had a players only meeting here in Vegas, which is sort of cliche. It's what happens obviously when teams are struggling, but I think that there's an acknowledgement here that they have to own this to a certain degree. And it might not be enough to keep change from coming. Without those guys playing better, I don't think it matters who the coach is. I mean, they just don't have enough good minutes getting put in by the defensemen, and they're giving up a ton defensively.
CJ, what does the future hold, do you think, for Tyson Barrie?
It's a little tough to say. I think he'd be open to a trade. I don't think he's opposed to that. I mean, it is his UFA year, and he's not been putting up numbers, so he's costing himself money. He doesn't have the same role he had in Colorado because he doesn't play in the top power play unit with the Leafs. But, I don't know what that trade looks like because you're not really trading him at a time when his value is that high. And I think the Leafs want to see more of him and see if maybe he can turn it around, before going down that road. But, it feels like a critical stretch for him to try to get his game together because, it just can't continue with where it's been. And I think the toughest part is, he's acknowledged a lot of it's between the ears I don't think physically there's anything wrong with him. I think the Leafs are trying to put him in a better position. They've shuffled around their pairings. He's going to be getting a steady diet of ozone starts, and I think they're going to try to put him in a place where he can thrive as, someone who's been known for putting up points and moving the puck. But You know, if it doesn't improve, you know, I think that they're going to have to look at moving him and trying to bring in someone else who maybe is a better fit for what they need right now.
Do you get the sense, I know that Rye kind of made the parallel between the Leafs and the Flames and how both are struggling with high expectations right now. Do you get the sense that we could be talking about a shakeup in Calgary if things don't rectify themselves soon?
I think it's the exact same as what's going on in Toronto. I mean, if you're in a management seat with a team like that, it's one of the things you can do, right? Sometimes it's just to shock the system, too. I don't even know that it's always just that, oh, yeah, trading this one guy immediately makes everything better, or getting this one guy in the door immediately changes things. But it's a signal to the top players in the room and the guys that you're probably not talking about trading realistically in either case, that they've got to, you know, get their act together and play better and show a little bit more commitment to doing the little things in the game that maybe didn't earn them those big paychecks they have, but, you know, go a long way towards helping the teams win. And so, you know, I do think both organizations have to be looking at that. I mean, who knows? Maybe they could even find a fit with each other. You know, obviously they had, you know, pretty serious trade talks with Kadri back before July 1st. And, you know, I could see some mutually beneficial fits happening there just because both organizations might feel the need to try to make that kind of change.
Mm-hmm. Chris Johnson's with us. Our NHL insider from Sportsnet joins us Tuesdays and Thursdays. What the big story that a lot of people are watching today is what's going to happen with Garnet Hathaway after he was caught spitting on Eric Goodbranson of the Anaheim Ducks last night. There's not much precedent for what a punishment like that would look like. What do you expect the punishment to be? Is there's a hearing tomorrow for Garnet Hathaway?
Well, I expect it to be fairly severe. You know, just because you don't, you know, it's an act that you can't have in the sport. It's not something I think anyone likes to see. And, you know, I think you have to sort of understand hockey culture to say, well, how is that worse than, you know, punching someone in the face? Or, you know, it can be tough to sort of work through in your mind because we see some pretty violent acts on the ice that are more acceptable parts to the game. But I think, you know, spitting on an opponent is something the league is very clear that it doesn't tolerate. You know, the match penalty, you know, handed out on the ice by the referee suggests, you know, how serious it is. And you're right. I can't point you to, you know, this suspension happened 3 years ago and this tells us exactly what he's going to get. But, you know, I'm fairly confident saying this is not going to be a light suspension. And, you know, I think it's important to, you know, establish a precedent, I guess, because we don't want to see it happen again. I know that there's been accusations of spitting in the past, but rarely has it been as clear as that incident was caught on the camera. And, you know, once the hearing goes through, you know, I'm thinking you're looking at multiple games here. I don't know how far George Parros and his crew will go with it, but, you know, I don't think that they're going to err on the side of a shorter suspension with this one.
Thought on the Avalanche. We'll see him here tonight against the Calgary Flames. Missing bodies all over the place, though it does sound like Grubauer and Francouz are back. Rantanen, Landeskog, Calvert-Wilson, and Joe still out.
Yeah, that's, I mean, and look, they still found a way to win. They got to win there in Vancouver on the weekend. You know, using their third and fourth goaltenders were the guys that were dressed. Antoine Bebo got a win for them there. And you know, I still see this as a very good team. You know, with the absences, the guys they have, there's no real replacing it. But you know, they've managed to still find a way to produce some offense, score goals. Nathan MacKinnon had a huge performance against the Canucks. You know, Nazem Kadri's fit in quite well for them. And I think that's one of the reasons in the offseason they were getting both him and Yandere Burakovsky and the trades they did was looking to have a little bit more secondary scoring behind the big dogs. And now with two of those guys out of the lineup, you know, they've had to lean on them a little bit more. And, you know, the Avalanche, our team, I think that they're trying to build themselves into a contender. I don't know that we can say they're fully there yet, but they played some pretty good hockey early in the year when they had everyone healthy. And even without the guys, you know, they've had the weather, some losing stretches, but, you know, I still think that they're a pretty top team, and that won't be an easy game for the Flames there tonight.
What else is cooking out there? We're clearly at a point where pressures are rising in a lot of these markets, and teams looking for help or a shakeup. What are they sniffing around?
Well, you know, I think that it's going to be an interesting period to come. I mean, they had the general managers meeting today in Toronto, and you know, while the topics discussed there are not particularly sexy. I do think historically we've seen a lot of seeds start to get laid at that meeting when everyone's face to face. You can have a side conversation and say, you know, look, if things continue the way they are for us, we might consider moving this player, or, you know, where are you at on this guy? And so, you know, I think that this sort of unofficially kicks off the period where we are going to see a little bit of action around the league. And, you know, New Jersey's won a few games lately, but you wonder where Taylor Hall ends up in this. You know, I think I look at a team like Toronto, and if they don't turn around and they don't get a couple wins here to you know, put things at bay, you know, do they look at them making some moves? You know, I think that's kind of where it's in the air. I don't think that there's anything that's imminent, but, you know, from this point on, GMs generally aren't making excuses for their team anymore. They're not thinking, all right, there's lots of time to turn this around. And so, you know, coming out of the meeting that's had today, I do think we're going to start to hear maybe a little bit more trade buzz and you know, maybe see some action in the next, you know, few weeks.
You talk about the topics not necessarily being the sexiest at GM's meetings. What were some of the topics discussed?
Well, you know, one of the big ones I know that was on there is trying to redefine a little bit the offside rule. You know, some GMs don't like the way that video review has gone. We've seen a couple sort of controversial plays where maybe technically by the rule book, you know, a goal should be overturned, but, you know, maybe not in the spirit of the way, you know, offside was meant to be. So I know one of the proposals that the GM had put on there was, you know, basically instructing officials, if it's even close at all at the line, just call it onside, because there's always the opportunity, should a goal be scored, for the defending team to come back and challenge and see if that was the case. And, you know, I think that there's a feeling that this, you know, with the new offside challenges, that linesmen don't want to be shown up, that they don't want to be seen to have missed the call that overturns a goal. And so maybe they've started calling those plays at the line a little too closely. They're also, you know, looking back at something they've talked about a fair bit in the past, where, you know, basically you almost treat the blue line as a plane, like you have in the NFL when it comes to a touchdown being scored. And that, you know, as long as any part of a player's body is still onside, even if his skate's up in the air, that he'd be deemed to be onside. And I think, you know, really what you're looking for here, or what the design with some of these, you know, sort of, it sounds like minutia and really specific tweaks, is about improving game flow, having fewer whistles, fewer offsides, and, you know, obviously promoting more offensive opportunities. You know, so much of video review, when you think about it, just stands to take back goals. It just stands to, you know, remove scoring from the sport. And I think fundamentally the league believes it would be better if there's even more scoring than we've seen in the past. And so, you know, I think that's some of the stuff they talk about. You know, they get CBA updates. There was an update on the expansion draft process that's going to happen with Seattle. You know, I think they get their first little look at maybe what the salary cap projections are for next season, although it's still pretty early for that. And, you know, I wasn't at the meeting today because I'm down in Vegas for the Leafs game tonight. But, you know, those are the types of things that were on the agenda for today's meeting.
Final one for me, just a thought on a surprisingly strong start for the Habs. They made a charge last year to playoff spot, but now we'll have to live without Drouin and Byron for significant time. Where are they? And in that tough Atlantic, what would you expect from them moving forward?
Well, you know, they're a team I wonder if you see get into the trade market, just because, you know, I think it's actually pretty rare that a team suffers an injury and a GM goes and makes a deal, you know, directly because of that injury. Just, you know, it doesn't necessarily work that way. But, you know, in the Habs case, they probably were not as deep up front as a whole in general as they would like. You know, they're trying to be patient with some young players there and integrate them in their lineup. But, you know, losing Drouin, who's had a pretty good start to a season, you know, up to 8 weeks, it sounds like, you know, he could be out. So that's not a minor injury after wrist surgery he had. You know, Paul Byron has been the player that's been pretty useful for the Canadiens the last few years. You know, I could see them at least seeing what they, you know, if they can take a dip into the trade market, because, you know, they went right down to the last week of the regular season last year, narrowly missed a wild card playoff spot in the East. You know, I think ideally they'd love to get in now, you know, take that next step. They're in a tough phase, right? I mean, the core of their team is still guys like Carey Price and Shea Weber, you know, who went to management this summer and said, look, we don't want a long rebuild here. We don't know how much is left in our careers. We want this to happen as quick as possible. And obviously, organizationally, you know, they put an emphasis on drafting and brought in Nick Suzuki and the deal for Pacioretty, you know, brought in Kotkaniemi with a high draft pick. You know, I think that they're sort of caught between two phases. And so you know, if they can get in the playoffs this year, it's going to be a big boost. And you know, that might require Mark Bergevin to get out there and try to bring in a little bit of scoring help, you know, especially with the injury news that they've got here in the last few days.
One more with Chris Johnston, our NHL insider from Sportsnet, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And wrap it up with a couple of NHL veterans who look like perhaps their careers are in doubt going forward. What does the future hold for Corey Schneider in New Jersey after he cleared waivers? And Ilya Kovalchuk, who certainly has an uncertain future with the LA Kings.
Yeah, it's you know, time comes quickly for those guys. You know, I think Corey Schneider's situation, it's tough to say for sure. You know, he finished last season strongly. He had, you know, he had a good last month or so to last year. He played for the U.S. at the World Hockey Championship and had a great performance there. Even had a strong preseason for New Jersey, but the results haven't been there in the games he's played this year. And they just reached a breaking point with him. I mean, they're trying to claw back in after a slow start. They made a trade for Louis Domingue, who'd been in the AHL. And so, you know, for the time being, they're going to go with Scott Wedgwood and Louis Domingue at the NHL level, and it's up to Corey Schneider, who still has 2 years left on his deal beyond this one, to play well in the AHL, to try to rediscover his form. I mean, look, this guy was one of the league's better goaltenders when he was healthy. He earned the contract that he signed with New Jersey, but you know, after having that pretty major hip surgery 2 years ago, it's been a tough road back for him. And you know, I guess no one can say for sure if he'll ever get it back. He's a great guy. I know the Devils organization loves him. They're hoping he goes down there and tears it up and gives them a reason to bring him back to the NHL. But at this point, that isn't a certainty, and a lot's going to depend on how he performs down in the AHL. I think Kovalchuk's situation is fairly unique. He's got a complete no-move clause this season, so he's not getting traded somewhere he doesn't want to go. He's owed $2.65 million on a bonus that gets paid December 15th. I do think after that point in time, there might be a trade market for him, keeping in mind he only makes $700,000 prorated in actual money this year. So it's a pretty cheap acquisition for another team. He's got $4 million and change on his deal next year. You know, I think it's most likely he's in limbo until at least December 15th. Maybe once that bonus is paid, the trade chatter will pick up for him and they can at least get him somewhere where he's willing to waive that no move clause and you know, see what he's got left as an NHL player.
Thanks, CJ. Talk to you Thursday.
All right, boys. We'll talk soon.